Now we're holding on page 148 in Kiddushin, beginning of Perek Ha'ish Mekadesh, middle of Ois Lamed Beis. The subject of this Perek, since the first Perek had started with the concept of Kiddushin and the methods by which you could do Kiddushin, and then it digressed most of the rest of the Perek to digress to talk about other kinds of Kinyonim, and then about mitzvahs, and so on and so forth. So now we're getting back to matters of Kiddushin. And the Perek deals with various details about it, how Kiddushin can be, who can do Kiddushin, and various details about that. So towards the end of the Perek, it talks about in the middle of the parak, it talks about, for example, cases where a person is Makadish based on a certain understanding about himself. So he tells a woman that, accept the Kiddushin on the understanding, for example, that I'm rich. So now, if it turns out that he's not rich, then it's not a valid Kiddushin because it was supposed to be on the understanding that he is and he isn't, and then similarly other examples.
He should say on the condition that I'm poor.
Whatever. You can have the other way around. Both being poor, being poor and being rich, both have their advantages and disadvantages. Right. So whatever, if he says, I'm a Nas, I'm being a Kaddish, I'm conditioned that I'm rich, and it turns out he's poor, or vice versa, then the Kiddushin is no good.
Right.
So the Gemara continues in this vein. Tana Rabbanan, I'm a Nas Shani Karyona. Suppose he says, I'm the Kaddish you on the understanding that I am a Kaviyona. Kaviyona is Moloshim Kara. It means somebody who's capable of reading, meaning somebody who's capable of reading the Torah and Shul. How much does he have to be able to read for him to be considered a Kaviyona? Kivin Shakara Shlosha Psukim, the Beis HaKnesses, once he's able to read three Psukim or more in Shul, three Psukim being the minimum size of an Aliyah, then Harezim Kadeshis, then it's a valid Kiddushin because then that meets the criteria of a Kaviyona according to the Tanakhama. You have to remember, back then, everybody laying their own aliyah. There was no concept of a Baal Kurda. That concept came only later when you had, not everybody is expert enough to be able to read by themselves from a Sefer Torah without an Kurdish interrupt. Yeah.
Rabbi Yehuda.
Yes, so you would be a Kayana. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, but Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says, no, Ad Sheyikra V'Yitargen. It's not good enough that he can read the Torah. It has to be that he can also translate it. The postkim discuss, is Rabbi Yehuda adding to the Tanakhama, or is he modifying, meaning, in other words, does he agree that the person has to be able to read at least three psukim, but as well, he says he has to be able to translate, or does Rabbi Yehuda mean maybe even if he only knows how to read one pasuk, then that's enough as long as he also knows how to translate it? Now, when we say Yitargim, makes it sound like he can translate it however he feels like, so Yitargim midaite, you're telling me that he can translate however he feels is the right way to translate, and not using an official Targum such as Targum Onkelos? That can't be. V'hotanya, we learn in a brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the same Rabbi Yehuda says, Hamatargum posuk tzerosoi, if a person translates a posuk literally, meaning in places where the Targum that we use, Targum Onkelos, does not translate literally and adds words to make the posuk clearer, if he doesn't do that, he leaves out those words and translates it word for word, hareza badoi, then he's a faker. He's a liar because he's misrepresenting what the posuk says. We'll give examples of that in a second. The Hamosif Olav, and then on the other hand, if he adds words of his own and figures, listen, if Unkelos could add, then I can also add whatever I want. Harezim Mechara from a goddess, and he's blaspheming and reviling and insulting Hashem. Like this, he's saying that Hashem's words are a free-for-all, and a person can do with them whatever he wants. What about, now Unkelos does add words, the answer is, Rashi says Unkelos didn't decide on his own to add those words. In fact, the Targum, Unkelos, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, was given to Moshe at Har Sinai. Now that doesn't mean that Hashem told Moshe the actual Aramaic words that are to be used to translate, but the point is that Hashem told Moshe there are certain psukim that are not to be translated word for word, rather they have to be translated, you have to add these points and you have to paraphrase in this way to make the sense of the pasuk, to bring out the sense of the pasuk. So we find that Unkelos does that, for example, in the brochas of Yaakov and Moshe to the Shvatim, and in the Shiros, and in some psukim where it has to do with matters of halacha, where the halacha is not so clear from Torah Shabbat, but all those things. It actually stresses Unkelos didn't add them on his own. He did that based on that Kabbalah that went back to Moshe Mitzrayim, which particularly the Gemara mentions that he learned it from Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So what are examples of this kind of thing of translating not like Targum Onkelos and that makes him a liar or machada from a goddess respectively? So Rashi gives an example as follows: you have the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, Loi Sane Al Riv. Now, that has a lot of different meanings. There's a long Rashi over there that explains there are a number of different meanings to that pasuk, the simple meaning, if you were to just translate word for word, lo sane, do not speak up, al riv, in an argument. So that makes it sound like it's saying when there's an argument in Beis Din, don't come to testify. Well, if a person translates it that way, that's a lie. You have to come to testify in Beis Din when you know Agus. So instead, how does Unkelus translate it? So he translates, Tosfos brings the translation, on the contrary, it means when someone is asking you for a matter of judgment, or when you're a dayan and you have to give your opinion in judgment, don't just withhold your opinion. So on the contrary, loisana al riv lintos, the pasuk is saying, don't answer on a riv, on an argument, lintos, to turn away, means don't think your reaction might be, well, there's an argument, none of my business, I'm going to recuse myself and I'm just going to turn away and not give my opinion. Don't do that. On the contrary, you're a dayan, give your opinion. That's the correct translation of the pasuk according to Unkelus. So now, if a person were to not do that, and he were just to translate it literally, don't speak up in a matter of judgment, then that would be misrepresenting what the pasuk is saying. What about as far as adding? So Rashi doesn't give specific examples of adding. Rashi just says, in other words, like he's making the Torah free for all. Tosfos gives an example. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel an example, a different example, where you have both, where you have examples of translating too literally or of adding. You have a pasuk also in Parashas Mishpatim, by Yudos Elekei Yisrael, that describes over there Moshe, Aaron, the Skenim, Nodav and Avihu, all go up onto Mount Sinai by Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, rather. The pasuk is by Yudos Elekei Yisrael. Translated literally word for word, it would be, they saw the God of Yisrael. Now, if a person were to translate that way, that's lying. They didn't see Hashem himself. You can't see Hashem. On the other hand, what if a person were to add his own words and say they saw the malachim of the God of Israel? That would be machara from a gadif. That would be, what do you mean? You're talking about Hashem himself, and you're substituting a malach for Hashem. That's blaspheming and insulting Hashem. Rather, the correct translation, the way Unkelus has it, v'chazor yasirkora delakod Yisrael, they saw the glory of the God of Israel. So not that they saw Hashem himself, but they saw the glory and the radiance of the Shechinah. That's the right way to translate it.
But when you say that, no one knows what glory means.
We may not know what it means, but it means, in other words, we understand that it means that they didn't see Hashem himself, but rather they saw some kind of reflection of Hashem's greatness. Fine, we may not understand, we may not have the ability, we may not have the kalim to understand what exactly that consists of, but we know that it means that they saw something of Hashem himself, and not just a malach, but on the other hand, not Hashem himself, because like Kalilah and Adem Machai. So that's an example. Marshall gives another example. What about, for example, you have the psukim by Dabar Hashem or Moshe Lamer. What if you were to translate it, Umal Yekorah Dashem es Moshe, the glory of Hashem spoke with Moshe. That would also be Machara from a Gadif, says Marshall. Because the fact is, there it's not just an outgrowth of Hashem, so to speak, like the glory of the Shina that spoke to Moshe. There it's Hashem himself, Pel Peh, speaking to Moshe. So you can't do that. Now, it is true, Unkelus will do, a lot of times, Unkelus' translation, and again, as Rashi says, this all comes, L'moshe Misinai, that a lot of times, when it uses expressions, human-like expressions about Hashem, a lot of times, Unkelus will translate them, not literally again, in order that we shouldn't mistakenly think that Hashem has a body. You'll have words like, you'll have expressions in a pasuk, like, for example, Yad Hashem, and Unkelus will translate it, the power of Hashem, or something, rather than literally the hand of Hashem. That's how L'moshe Misinai, to translate that way, but here we're talking about this person is just going to make up his own ideas of how to translate things, so we're saying that's no good. Anyway, getting back to the question in the Gemara, then the point is that when Rabbi Yehuda is saying the person has, in order to be a karyona, the person has to have the ability to read the psukim in shul with Nekudas and Tshirup out of the Sefer Torah, and also to translate it, just saying he can translate it implies that he can just make up his own translation on the spot. Clearly it's not so. Ela, my targum, targum didan. So we have to answer when Rabbi Yehuda says, Adshayikra via targum, means that he's able to translate it with our targum, meaning targum unkelus. So if he's expert enough in the Torah that he's able to read from the Sefer Torah with Nekudas and Tshirup, even though they're not written over there, and to know the meaning and to know the targum unkelus on the pasuk or on the psukim, and be able to say them, then Rabbi Yehuda says, now that makes him considered a karyona. Now, Vahani mili de omala karyona. So all of that would apply if he tells the woman, I'm Mekadosh you on condition that I'm a Karyona. Aval Omala Korana. What if instead he says, I'm Mekadosh you on the understanding that I am a Kora. A Kora means more than just somebody who's capable of reading some psukim, means an expert in Mikra, an expert in Tanakh. So then, ad-kori arise in Nevi'u Ksuvim b'diyuka, then it would have to be that he has the ability to read Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim b'diyuk, and can have all the Nekudas and Torah correct.
By heart, they never wrote it down.
What?
By heart, they never wrote it down.
Maybe by heart. No, but Pashtus not by heart. But Pashtus means that you can take out any sefer of Tanakh and Shul over there, and he would be able to read from it fluently, even though, remember, they didn't have the Nekudas and Torah written.
Sorry, I said it wrong. They wrote it down. The Gemara, they didn't write
down. Yeah, the Petor Shebachsav was written down. But, yes, and now he's able to take out any such sefer and read it, yeah. Okay. What about, continues the Braisa, Amanas?
That would also mean that he didn't need to know all the traps and every single mode of chapter 8.
That is true. Well, that's part of being a kora. That's part of being an expert in psukim. Yeah.
They did write booklets, like private people.
They were allowed to write private booklets of halachas. That's true, but that's not relevant to our point over here, right? But in terms. Right, right. But as far as the Nekudas and Truk, they weren't written at this time yet. They were still Baal Peh. The symbols, the first time we find the symbols for Nekudas and Truk written is in the times of the Gaonim by the Baalei HaMasora. There's an idea from Elia Bacher that they were first invented in that time, but from the Zohar, it comes out that not so. From the Zohar, it comes out they existed all along from when Hashem first gave the Torah, but they were meant to be Baal Peh until the Baalei HaMasora had to write them down, just like the rest of Torah Baal Peh had to be written down, so we don't forget it.
And then, does that mean that nowadays that nobody would be able to be a kara because nobody knows Tehillim Trup?
Well, some people do know Tehillim Trup. You have Sfarad Shekihilas that know it, but yeah. In that case, maybe B'diyuk means with whatever diyuk they have in that time. Okay. Onward. Amanas Shani Shoyne. What about if he says to the woman, I'm being Makadish you on condition that I am a Shoyne? So that implies that he's Shoyne is more than Mishnah, so implying that he has to be able to learn something of Mishnah. What's the definition of that? Chizkiya omar halachas. Chizkiya says that it means that he would have to be able to know to be able to say halachas. Halachas the Moshe Mi-Sinai specifically. Eventually they were all written down in Torah Shabbat Peh. At this time they were still by heart, but that he's able to repeat over halachas the Moshe Mi-Sinai. Doesn't mean all of them, doesn't mean some of them, whatever. The point is that he's able to do that. That's the definition of Shoyne according to Chizkiya. Rav Yochanan omar Torah. Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, says that Shoyne means that he's able to say Torah. Now, Torah, in the narrower sense, means Torah Shebachsav, so the Gemara assumes that that's what it means, and therefore it asks, what do you mean? Maisvi, I have a contradiction from Rav Braisa. Rav Braisa says, Ezehi Mishnah, what is the definition of Mishnah? Now, nowadays, we would say, well, what Rebbe wrote, what Rebbe compiled for us, but this is before that was compiled into the official Mishnah. So what's the definition of Mishnah? Rav Meir Omer Halachas. Rav Meir says it means Halachas the Moshe Mi-Sinai. Rav Yehuda Omer Medrash. And Rav Yehuda says it means Medrash. Now, that means, when we say Medrash, we mean the Medrashi Halachas, the ones that were afterwards written as Sifra, as Mechilta, and Sifra, and Sifri, where they go through Pasuk by Pasuk, the Halachic parts of Torah, and show how the Halachas are extracted and derived from the Pesukim. We don't mean Droshim, like Medrash Rabbah, which gives droshes of stories and exponent and matters of Midas Tovus and everything that we learn from the Pesukim. We don't mean that kind of Medrash. We mean Medrash of Halacha. In any case, neither one of them says that it means Torah Shebachsav. So what does Rabbi Yochanan mean when he says that Mishnah means Torah, which sounds like it means Torah Shebachsav? So the answer is, that's what he means. My Torah, Medrash Torah. By saying Torah, Rabbi Yochanan means exactly that. He means the Midrashim that extract the halachas from the Pesukim. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan is defining. So in other words, basically, the Machlokas Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan is exactly or almost exactly the same as the Machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Chizkiya had said that means halachas. Rabbi Meir also says it means halachas. Rabbi Yochanan had said Torah, and Rabbi Yehuda says that means Medrash Torah, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan meant also. Okay? Vahani mimidu amala tanena. Now again, that's if he tells her that I am a tanena, I'm somebody who's capable of saying something of Mishnah. Avalim amala tanana, but if he tells her I am a tana, now we don't mean a tana like the generations of Chachamim before Rebbe, we mean a tana like this in the sense that it's used throughout Shas often where it means in the times of Amiroyim, in the yeshivas of Amiroyim, there would be people who were experts in Mishnayos and Braises and would say them over in the Bismedrash. There's a big argument whether at that point the Mishnayos were actually written down. When we say that Rebbe compiled the Mishnah, did he actually write it down? The Rambam writes yes. Rashi consistently says no. So maybe even the Mishnah wasn't written down at that point, but certainly many of the Braises were not. So you'd have the Tana would be almost like a living sefer who would go to in the Bismedrash. He would be saying over Braises, and then they would discuss them in the Bismedrash, as we have throughout Shas. So if he says that I am a Tana, then it has to be Adatani Huchsa Sifro Visifri Vitisefta. Then it has to be that he's fluent in all the halachas of Moshe Mitzrayim, and Sifro, which is a Medrash halacha on Vayikra, and Sifri, which is a Medrash halacha on Vayikra and Bamidbar and Dvarim, Vitisefta, and the collection of Tisefta, which is a collection of Vrises from the Yeshiva of Rabbi and Rabbi Oshia, which is considered the most authoritative, the most official collection of Vrises. Okay. Next. Continues the Gemara, Al Menas Shani Talmud. What if he tells her, I'm being Mekadosh you on the condition that I am a Talmud? So we don't just mean a Talmud, any old Talmud in the Yeshiva. So, Ein Oymim Kishimin Ben Azai, Kishimin Ben Zoyma. Now, it doesn't mean he has to be the highest caliber of Talmud to be like Ben Azai or Ben Zoyma. They were Talmudim of the senior Chachamim of their times. They actually, Rashi brings, they did not receive Smicha, which is why we don't call them Reb Shimon Ben Azai and Reb Shimon Ben Zoyma. We usually just call them Ben Azai or Ben Zoyma. Sometimes we call them by their first names as well. But they never received smicha because they passed away young. But Rashi brings, in their times, there was nobody among the Talmudim who was as great as them in Torah. In fact, the Mishnah tells us at the end of Sota, when Ben Azai passed away, bot lo shakdonim, the people who are really diligent and constantly working on learning Torah, that he was the last of them who passed away. So we see that they were the greatest of the Talmudim. So when he says, I'm a Talmud, doesn't mean he has to be of the caliber of Ben Azai and Ben Zoyma. By the way, they came up also in today's Daf HaYomi. We began today in Daf HaYomi, beginning to start in Masech Tahorius. They also, the Gemara mentions, you may have a Talmud of the caliber of them who's capable of passing halacha on his own, even though he hasn't yet received smicha. Anyway, so you don't say he has to be of that caliber. Ella, what would be the definition of a Talmud? Kol shesholem osim b'chol mokam dover echab b'talmudai. If it's a person where you can ask him any random thing in what he's learned, va'omrei, and he will know it, and he'll be able to say it on the spot. Va'afilu b'masech tekala, even if that thing is in masech tekala. So Rashi over here explains that Masechta Kala, it's one of the Masechta Ketanis. It's a shortish brisa, which says that a Kala without the bracha, without the brachas by the chuppah is also to her husband. So it's a fairly simple, straightforward halacha. So now, if this is what he's learned, and now you can ask him that, and he's able to tell that over, then he's considered a Talmud. Elsewhere, and this Gemara is also brought in Shabbos, Rashi gives a different explanation that it means that, on the contrary, Masechta Kala, because it's one of the Masechtas Ketanis, is not studied as commonly. So therefore, it means that if he knows even something as obscure as Masechta Kala, which the average person does not learn, then you can call him a Talmud, who then he's worthy to be called a Talmud for the definition that we're saying over here. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Psochim that if an Amah Oretz marries a Bas Koyin, that's not such a good thing, and therefore the minhag has developed that when a chosin is engaged to a Bas Koyin, he learns at least one Masechta in order that now he can be considered a Talmud Chacham, as we're saying over here, and very often for that purpose they do Masechta Kala. There are actually two Masechtas called Kala. There's Kala, there's Masechta Kala, and there's Kala Rabsi. Kala Rabsi actually runs to several Prokim and has quite a bit of material in it. Kala Plain is, like Rashi says over here, a fairly short, straightforward thing. Anyway, Tosfos there in Shabbos gives another explanation. Kala also means the public droshes that they gave, particularly before the Yom Tov. We know famously the concept of Yarche Kala. They had special sessions of learning in the yeshivas in Bavel, in Adar, and in Elul, among other things, in preparation for the Yom Tov. And they would teach during that time the halachas of the upcoming Yom Tov. So Kol Shesholem Oisim B'chol Mokem V'Afilu B'Masechta Kala means even if all the Talmud knows is those halachas of the upcoming Yom Tov, which they just taught in the Yarche Kala, nevertheless that, and he's able to say on the spot something that he learned from that, any random thing they ask him in that, then that's enough for him to be considered a Talmud. Okay. Next, the Gemara continues, Al Manas Shani Chocham. What if he's Makadish the woman saying on condition that I am a Chocham? We don't say he has to be as great a chacham as the chacham of the yeshiva of Yavne, or like Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues. Ella, the definition of a chacham for this purpose would be when you ask him a matter of chachma, meaning something that requires svara, something that you don't just have black letter mishnah or brisa or whatever it is, something that you have to investigate with svara and figure out the logic behind it and decide what it should be. So if you're able to ask him any random thing like that in Svara, the Oimra, and he's able to say it, then he can be considered a Chacham. So in other words, a person who has a mind that's been shaped by Torah, where now he's able, now he has a Now he has a Torah cup, and now he's able to answer things based on his ability to analyze according to the way that Torah is supposed to be done. Next, Almanas Shani Giver. What if he says, I'm being Makadish for you on condition that I am strong? We don't say the definition of strong in this case is if he's as mighty a person as Avner, the general of Shaul, or Yoav, the general of David. He doesn't have to be that strong to be considered a giver.
Shimshin.
It's considered he's a giver if people are afraid of him because of his strength. So he's stronger than the average person around him, in other words. You have the famous expression in English that says, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So maybe it means, in other words, by the same token, maybe if everybody around there is weak and he has a little bit of strength, then everybody is considered a giver for this purpose. Next, I'm a not shiny osher. If he says, on condition that I'm rich, what's the definition of rich for this purpose? You're not going to say that he has to be as rich as Rabbi Lozim and Chausum, where the Gemara tells us in Yuma that he inherited from his father 1,000 ships and 1,000 cities. And yet, by the way, the Gemara says he didn't spend his time taking care of his riches. He actually would go around with a sack of flour on his shoulder and go from one place to another to find the best rebbeim to learn Torah from. He doesn't have to be as rich as that, or as rich as Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, where the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that his Maisa Behema alone, where in Maisa Behema, we had recently in Shlosha Prokhim of Rambam in the last few days, is all the newborn animals that were born this year, Yaakov Maisa, his Maisa Behema alone amounted to 120,000 calves, which means that in any given year, he had 1.2 million calves born in his herd of cattle. So he's fabulously rich. So you don't say that a rich person is defined only if he's that rich. It means if people in the city respect him because of his wealth. So again, it could be everybody else is miserably poor and he has a few dollars. Maybe that would be enough to make him an usher for this purpose.
It's not objective, it's subjective.
It's to a certain extent subjective, right. Yeah.
Why don't we say the same thing with a person that says, I'm a chacham or whatever?
Because there you have a more objective criteria. Torah, after all, is not changeable from place to place, but riches and strength and all kinds of things like that are going to vary in different times.
It says, I don't care. He knows something. The fact that he said it.
The fact that he said it is not enough. In fact, yeah, the Mishnah says in connection with where he said that I'm rich and it turns out he's poor, vice versa. The Mishnah says, even if she says, you know what, I would have married him anyway, doesn't matter. The kedushin was almanas that, and therefore, if the condition is not valid, then the kedushin is not valid. She wants to accept a new kedushin from him without conditions, gives him to hate, but those original kedushin are no good. Okay. Next, almanas shani tzaddik. What if he says on condition that I'm a tzaddik? I feel a Rosha Gomer, even if he's known to be a complete Rosha, Mekudeshes. Nevertheless, the Kedushin is valid. Now, maybe not valid for sure, but at least it's a Suffolk Kedushin. Shema hear her Tshuva B'daitai. Because he may have thought Tshuva in his mind. And even though that would be a very low level of Tshuva, real Tshuva is a person completely abandons what he, and then a person really the highest level of Tshuva that Amman describes based on the Gemara and Yuma is when he's in exactly, we talked about it a day or two ago, is when he's in the exact same situation and doesn't do it. So here the thought of Tshuva is like the least degree of Tshuva. Nevertheless, that can be enough to turn him from a Rosh HaGomer to a Tzaddik. So at least we have a Suffolk, whether he did that, and therefore she's Suffolk Mekudeshes. So we see from you have the expression, that a person can turn b'shaita choda, where the word shah, yesh kone lama b'shah achas, it's explained that the word shah, which literally means an hour, can also mean a turning. So a person can have one mental turning, and that makes him a whole different kind of person.
We see a second later, he goes back to the status of a Russia.
Right, but right now, for that moment, he may have had that thought, which is enough to make him that now he's no longer a Russia.
This is the same as in Kesubah, under the chuppah, the man... The Kotzker actually says
on this that this may be specifically when we're talking in connection with Kiddushin, because we find a Chosin is one of the three examples where all of his Averis are forgiven. We learn it from a Pasuk in connection with Esav. There's a Sicha where the Rebbe talks about it, why of all things should we learn it from Pasuk about Esav, but in any case, so with a Chosin, uniquely we can say then that all of his Averis are forgiven. Not necessarily the Kotzker says would this apply in a regular run-of-the-mill case. Nevertheless, though, at least without that, there is the idea, in other words, that a single thought of tshuva can turn a person in a kotzer. There's a vote on that, actually. There's a vote from one of the Balei HaMusar from the altar of Novodok that's brought, that he says, you know, the Eibishter gives that person the capability, because if a person was to go b'koyach atzmai, only with his own abilities, and try to do tshuva, he wouldn't be able to do such a transformation in akotze al akotze. And he compares it. Imagine a person decides that, you know, till now I haven't had a kosher kitchen. Now I'm going to start eating kosher. What if he decides, you know what, I can't afford to replace all my pots and pans at one time. I'm going to replace them one at a time. Not going to do any good. The treifas from his other kalim are still going to treif up this one as well. So the same way, tshuva really requires that a person changes min akotze el akotze, and that's a unique power that the Eibishter put in, that a person has that capability. Anyway, so therefore, so that's what we're saying. He has that capability. You have the example in the Gemara of Rabbi Elazar ben Dudaya. So you have examples like that where a person can change in one moment, can change min akotze el akotze.
So what's the case with the chasam under the chuppah? He was known to be a rasha. And then under the chuppah, whatever he does, in the last second he does tshuva, and now his kedushin is kosher.
No, so that's what we're talking about over here is, ordinarily a man is not makadosh a woman al tanai. Nowadays, you know, by the chuppah, you don't hear the chosin saying to the kala, harayat mekudeshesli al tanai shani tzadik, or whatever, right? We're talking about, let's say he did that, though. Let's say he did that. We're saying that now, if he's saying I'm a nas shani tzadik, then there's at least the suffix, he might be a tzadik, might have become a tzadik at that moment by having a hirud tshuva, and therefore the kedushin is valid, at least in the suffix. You can't for sure say that it's valid kedushin, but there she would need a get from him if she wants to accept kedushin from somebody else, in the suffix. That's what we're saying. Now there is, on the other hand, they talk about, you don't say that when it comes to eidei kedushin. You taka don't say that. Eidei kedushin taka
no.
Has to be.
I don't know. We got to keep going.
Okay. We also need to keep on mute, please. Okay. So Eidei Kedushin also can't have done certain averus that would make them posel l'eidus. We touched yesterday on that point a little bit. There we don't say they may have had a hiru tshuva and now they're kosher to eidim. There you have to know for sure that they're of the caliber to be eidim. But here we're talking about as far as the kedushin. Next, continues the Gemara. I'm a nashani rosha. What if, on the contrary, he's makadosher on condition that I'm a rosha? The other way around, if he was tzaddik gomer, even if until now we knew him to be a tzaddik gomer mekudeshes, this kedushin is still valid. Again, at least in the suffix, shemehir hu dvar avodas kechavim v'libre, because he may have had a thought of avodah zarah in his mind, and as we learned in the Gemara a couple of days ago, unlike all other thoughts of avodah, which Hashem does not hold against a person, thoughts of avodah zarah Hashem does. So that would be enough to make him a rosh gomer at least momentarily. So therefore, again, we don't know for sure that happened, but it may have, and therefore it's a suffix kedushin. What kind of a woman would want to marry him on a Nashani Rosh? I don't know, maybe someone who figures she can transform him for the good.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Continue to
Yeah.
Or if she herself is a Rosh.
She herself may be a Rosh. Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Onward. Continues the Gemara. Now, since we're talking about the caliber of a Chacham and of a Talmud and so on and so forth, and of wealth, so now the Gemara talks about in that connection that you have those different places in the world that have more of a tendency to one or another of those things. So the Gemara says, Asora kabin Chachma yodel orlam. Yeah.
So
Sufik Kedushin would mean, it entails that if So let me explain. So Suffolk Kedushin means that if she wants to marry somebody else, she's going to need a get from him. If she wants to marry him, she's going to need a Kedushin that do not have a Suffolk in it. And if he dies without giving her a proper Kedushin, then she may need Yibum or Chalitza. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Asora kabin chokhma yodel olam. 10 measures of chokhma came down to the world. So Rashi defines over here, chokhma means Torah v'derech eretz. So it means that Hashem sent down Torah and derech eretz to the world. Actually, Iyun Yaakov says maybe not Torah, because we're talking about over here things that were given to the world at the time of creation, and the Torah hadn't been given yet. So that's why Rashi explains that it means not just Torah, says the Iyun Yaakov, it means also Chochmas Derech Eretz, means also the practical knowledge of how to live in the world and how to do business and how to do all kinds of other useful things. Anyway, 10 measures of that came to the world. Tisha Notla Eretz Yisrael, Ve'echad Kolo Ilum Koloi. 9 of them went to Eretz Yisrael, and 1 of them to the whole rest of the world combined, which is why we have the expression in the Gemara Avira de Eretz Yisrael, Machkin, the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes one wise. You have many examples, actually. The Medrash Rabbah on Eicha and Sichta has many, many examples of the Chochma of the people of Yerushalayim. When the Pasuk says over there, Ha'ira Bosi Om, that Yerushalayim was the greatest among the nations. So the Medrash brings over there many, many examples. In those times, the people of Athens were known to be very smart, but the people of Yerushalayim were even greater and wiser, and the Medrash brings many, many examples of that. So 9 out of the 10 measures of Chochmah in the world went to Eretz Yisrael. Maharsha points out, we're going to give a whole bunch of examples of here, Chochmah and strength and riches and so on and so forth. So the point is, in other words, you have some lands are more, not to say there can't be Chochmah in other places, but there are certain places that are more ready, it's more suitable, exactly, thank you, I couldn't think of the word, there are more places where it's more suitable, where it's easier for a person to get chokhmah or strength or riches or whatever in one place more so than another. Now, two things that we don't have in this list, we're going to go through the whole list, we'll do some of it today and we'll continue more of it tomorrow, Baruch Hashem, I guess, but in any case, the list does not include sidkos or rishus. The Gemara does not say 10 kavim of being a tzaddik came down to the world, or 10 kavim of wickedness came down to the world, because, as we know, it's tzaddik v'rosh l'chomer. Everything that's going to happen to a person throughout their lifetime is predetermined by Hashem, but not whether they're going to be a tzaddik or a rosh, that's in a person's hands. Sashen, what? Right. So therefore, we can't say that Hashem sent down 10 kavim of sidkos and 9 of them went to this place and 1 to everywhere else, which would imply that there were places where people are more likely to be tzaddikim, because it's not so.
Wherever you live.
Wherever you live, yeah. Okay. So why 10? Because you have 10 asorim amoris, which Hashem made the world. Okay. Next, Asara Kabni Yoifi, or Delorilam, 10 measures of beauty came down to the world. Tisha Notli Yerushalayim, 9 of them the city of Yerushalayim took. We know that Yerushalayim is mentioned often in Tanakh as a very beautiful city. Yifei Nois Nesos Kalaretz, we have particularly when Hordus rebuilt the second Beis Hamikdash, it was part of the most beautiful building in the world. The Echad Kalaylam Kulay, and the other one went to the whole world at large. The Maharal actually makes a point that beauty is not just a gashmiistic thing. Fundamentally, beauty is a ruch, comes from a greater degree of ruchnius. So since Yerushalayim has a greater degree of ruchnius, therefore that translates into more physical beauty. Next, Asara Kavin Ashirus Yerushalayim, 10 measures of wealth came down to the world. Tisha Notla Roimi, Rome got 9 of them. The Echad Kolayim Kulay, and the whole rest of the world got the remaining one. The Romans back then were fabulously wealthy. Later on, by the way, the Gemara mentions, in connection with one of the midrashim that we're going to talk about over here, that it started out in one place and then moved to another. Ben Yoyada points out the same thing with a number of the other things over here. We don't mean, for example, that Ad Hayom Hazeh, Rome has 9/10 of the wealth in the world. It means that at one time, Rome had it, and then after that, it migrated to other places.
Certain people like
Korach
were very wealthy.
Korach was very wealthy, but apparently that was one of the 10. That was also before Rome became a world power, but yeah. Next, Asara Kabin Anius Yerushalayim, 10 measures of poverty came down to the world. Tisha Nafla Bovel got 9 of them, Ve'echad Kolayim Kolay, and the whole rest of the world got the remaining one. The Gemara assumes at this point that what we mean is poverty is partial, that people are poor. The Gemara soon is going to explain that it doesn't mean that, it means a different kind of poverty. Mm-hmm. The fact is, the Gemara does mention in other places that the people of Bavel were very poor. The Gemara mentions it in connection with Shabbos and Yom Tov clothes and shoes, that they couldn't always afford special ones for Shabbos, for example. Next, Asara Kavin Gasas HaRuach Yerushalayim, 10 measures of Gasas HaRuach, of Gaiva, came down to the world. Tisha Notla Elam. Elam got 9 of them. Elam is the area of Persia, which includes Shushan. It's in southwestern Iran nowadays. Ve'echad Kolo Elam Kulay.
Is that the same one in Masayas?
Elim? No, that's Elim with an Aleph. This is Elam with an Ayin. Ve'echad Kolo Elam Kulay, and the rest of the world got the remaining one. So the Master, Gasas Lebovel Enochis, you're telling me that Gasas HaRuach, that Gaiva pride, did not come down to Bovel. V'hoksid, you have a Pasuk in Zechariah. Zechariah describes first how he sees an Eifa. He sees a container that holds an Eifa, which represents the Yetzer Hara. The Gemara specifically explains in Sanhedrin that it represents the Yetzer Hara specifically for Avodah Zarah. Now, he says, V'esto Enai V'era. He says, I lifted up my eyes and saw, and 2 women were coming out, and there was wind under their wings, they had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up this Eifer between earth and heaven. So they're lifting this Eifer to Cannes, and they're flying off with it somewhere. And Zechariah continues, I said to the Malach who was speaking to me, where are they taking this Eifer? Where are they taking this Yetzirah to? And he answered me, to build for it a house in the land of Shinar. Shinar is another name for Babel. So what's going on over here? This refers to the trait of chanufa, flattery, telling a rosha what you're doing is good, which the Gemara tells us in Sota is a very serious avera, and gasas aruach and gaiva shiyodel bavel, that these things came to bavel. Where do we get chanufa and gasas aruach from this description? Rashi says, when it says there was wind under their wings, that represents gasas aruach, that represents pride, when a person feels a very elevated spirit, he puts himself higher than everybody else. And as far as the chanufa, Rashi says, because since it describes them as the wings of a sword, the Gemara tells us in Kulin that the stork is called Chassidah. She always the Chassidus in Chabriseha. She acts in a very kind way towards her fellow stork. So apparently, then that's meant. It seems on the face of it, she acts very kindly to them, but we're meant to understand that she's doing it like in a hypocritical, flattering way, which is what Chanufa is all about. Like she's pretending to be better than she really is, basically. So therefore, if these women in the marshal over here are described as with wind under their wings, and their wings are like a stork, then those represent these traits of Chanufa and Gasas Aruach. And we're saying to build her for a house in the land of Shinar. So we see that Gasas Aruach is mostly found in Babel, not 9/10 of it in Elam. So the Gemara answers, Ein, yeah, lahocha nachis, it did come down here to Babel, the ishtabuv Yehud, ishtabuv lahasam. But then it spread out and migrated to there, to Elam. Dekanami, in fact, we can see that, Tichtiv Livnos Lovayis, because the Pasuk says, to build for her a house. First, Rashi explains, when it comes to carrying it, it mentions two women, but then when it talks about the house, it says to build for her a house. So that implies that only one of these midas, Chanufa, remained in Babel, but the other one, Gasas Aruach, migrated to Elam. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is, since it says Livnos, to build a house, implying they planned to build the house in Babel, but it didn't work out, and it wound up in Elam instead. Tosfos doesn't like either of those explanations, and Tosfos gives a third explanation, which is that this is one of the unique places, there's three places in Tanakh where you have the word la, which means for her or for it, in feminine, without the matik at the end of the hay. You have at the end of Parshas Matos, Vayikra la noivach v'shmoy, and Rashi explains over there that matik is missing because the name noivach didn't stick. The place came to be called Knos afterwards, like it was originally. You have two other places in Tanakh. This is one of them. Livnos la vayis, where the word la is missing the matik. So therefore, we doubtion it as if it's almost as if it's the word loy, livnos, loy vayis, they planned to build a house, but it didn't work out. So it wound up in Babel. It wound up in Elam, rather. So not in Babel, but rather in Elam. Marshall actually makes a point that this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin. Marshall makes a point there. Usually Chanufa and Gasas Aruach do not go together. Chanufa means when a person tells a Rosha what you're doing is good. Usually a Gas Ruach, a Baal Gaiva, is not going to be complimenting other people. So these two things usually don't go together. But they did go together, the Gemara explains there, and Marshall explains, among the Temer Chacham and Bavel. They unfortunately used both Chanufa and Gasas Aruach, but each in the wrong way. When it came to their fellow Temer Chachamim, they had too much Gasas Aruach, they had too much pride, and they're forcefully defending their opinions and putting down their Chavirim, and so forth. And then on the other hand, when it came to the Rishoyim, then they're talking gently to them and saying what you're doing is good, and you're good people. So they have, unfortunately, Chanufa and Gasas Aruach, each one used in the wrong way. Bepashtus, we're not talking about the actual Amiroyim, who I mentioned in the Gemara. We're not going to say they had bad minutes like that. We mean like the run-of-the-mill Talmidim in Babel. Anyway, so that's the answer, that Gasas Aruach is mostly in Elam, even though it started out in Babel. So the Gemara says, Amy, still, is that so? V'almar simon l'gasas aruach anius. Don't we learn elsewhere that a simon of gasas aruach, when a person is proud, is that he's poor? V'anius v'bavel hudeika. And we just said that poverty is mainly in bavel. So if poverty is mainly in bavel, then gasas aruach should also mainly be in bavel, not in Elam. The answer is, my anius the Torah. When we talk about that gasas aruach and poverty go together, we don't mean poverty of money, we mean poverty of Torah. That in Babel, they didn't have such a richness of Torah as they had in Eretz Yisrael. and particular, or rather than an Elam, they had a poverty of Torah. They weren't learning Torah the way they were supposed to. Why? Because they had gases of Ruach. Dichtiv, as you have a Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ochos Lanuk Tana, we have a little sister, the Shadayim Ein La, but she has no breast, meaning she has no ability to give nourishment to another. What does that mean? That refers to the country of Elam, Shazachsa Lumud Velazachsa Lalamid. They had the schus to learn Torah over there. There were great Temer Chacham over there. Daniel and Mordechai lived in Shushan, but they did not have the ability to teach Torah because the people of Elam had too much gases or ruach, and they were not interested in learning Torah. Therefore, they wound up with anius as well, not physical poverty, but rather poverty of Torah, because Rashi explains we don't need to learn constantly from the Chachamim. We know enough by ourselves, and they don't bother reviewing their learning enough. So the result of that gasa ruach is they also have poverty of Torah, as opposed to Rashi points out. And that's the point. When Mordechai taught the children, we don't really find him teaching the adults. We don't really find him teaching the adults, and the idea is that adults were too much gasei haruach to bother learning from him, or at least to learn from him properly. On the other hand, Rashi points out, in Bavel, Ezra lived in Bavel, and the pasuk says that he had this chos, l'lamed v'yishechim l'bavel, l'hoven b'teres Hashem, or l'lamed v'yishechim l'chukum mishpat, he had this chos to teach the Jewish people in Bavel Torah, because there they were not gasei haruach, and they were willing to learn from him, and to learn and review as many times as necessary, and therefore, in Bavel, they became great Talmid Chachamim. As opposed to an Elam, we're saying.
So the Gemara answers, from the Torah, do we assume that we're talking about...
We're talking about poverty of riches, of money, yeah. That's just the Jews and Goyim, yeah. Yeah, I mean, when we said, for example, 10 measures of riches came to the world and Rome got 9 of them, we don't just mean the few hundred Jews who lived in Rome. But that's just mean the Roman Goyim, so yeah, it'd be the same thing. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola. So that I've talked about in Tafshin and Beis, we've already completed all the preparations for Geula. Now we have to bring the Geula into the Gashmias, into the materiality of the world in an open way, in a buster. Nowadays we just have to open our eyes, and we'll see how the whole world is demanding that every Yid should be already in a state of Geula Mitzvashleim.
What does it mean, demanding? People have been demanding it now for at least 35 years.
What that means, I don't know, but it means, in other words, that the world expects us to be in a Mashiachic way already, and like they're surprised, they're also surprised at it. Yeah. Okay. Onward, halachas of Elul. So an Ovel during the 12 months shouldn't be a chazan on Ashtonium Kippur or Baltikea unless there's nobody of his caliber. So yeah, for example, an example of nobody of his caliber is, for example, the Rebbe was the Baal Tekeah in Rosh Hashanah, Tafshin Chav Vav, even though it was within a year after Rebbetzin, actually there it was more than 12 months, it was an Ibel year, but whatever, also after Rebbetzin Chana passed away, in Memtes, the Rebbe was the Baal Tekeah, even though, no, there was more than 30, no, whatever, I don't remember the exact Nafkamina, but whatever, the point is when there's nobody of that caliber, then yeah. As far as within Shloshim of other relatives, if he already has a Chazakah, then he's Mutter, because after all, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur cancel Shloshim, but otherwise better to not have him. Slichas, meanwhile, an Ovel, is able to be Chazen, just not doing Shiva.